welcome to Tales from the Periphery, episode 18, with me, your host, Mike Whittaker. Only a very quick preamble this time, because this is a very long interview. Basically, I've leapfrogged the episode I had in the can, which was another chat with Josh Dirksen, this time about Snowblind, as he was fresh from Adepticon at the time, to cover what's coming up for UK Games Expo, so that between me and my guest, we can give you a really good idea of the things you might want to sign up to and all the fun you can have. So, without further ado, on with the interview. I promised I wasn't going to be surprised about a guest, and I'm not surprised about this one. From the Battletech Discord, Catalyst demo agent, and the person who appears to have been saddled with running and organising half of UK Games Expo for the Battletech community, Nat Hardacre.
Yes, hello. Yeah, I am indeed saddled with organising the various big events, booked events for UK Games Expo, and I do indeed spend too much time fiddling about on the internet, including the UK Battletech Discord.
Don't we all?
Yeah. Certainly at the moment.
So we had you on last year in the wind outside of Hall 4 at the NEC, accompanied, I think, by the delicate sound of people moving very large dustbins around with a small tractor.
Yes, that's right. The very, very loud, alarmingly loud small tractor with the incredibly clangy dustbins.
And you with no voice.
And me with very little voice, yes, having spent the entire weekend wrangling cats all over the place with various bits and bobs. But yes.
So, but officially, this is your first appearance, proper appearance on the podcast. You know, as a regular listener, you know what that means.
Indeed, yes, this is definitely the first for more than 30 seconds worth of inaudible.
It might have been 3 minutes, but hey.
Yeah.
Right, so how did you get into Battletech?
This is going to date me. I saw the product review in White Dwarf.
Back when White Dwarf actually covered things that weren't Games Workshop.
That's right, when it was an actual hobby magazine. I saw it in the review page, which I've now forgotten the name of, but they only gave it a 7 out of 10. I thought it was really good. And I badgered my parents to get me a copy for birthday, Christmas. It's that long ago, I can't remember now. Then it arrived, and it even had two, probably 1/44 scale plastic Gundam model kits. Ooh. In the box, which was very confusing because one of them was a Wolverine, and in the initial Battle Droids box set, but Wolverine didn't yet exist. That was very confusing for me.
But, well, you were an early starter.
I was a very early starter. It's stuck with me ever since, for the past 40-odd years, as it is now, which is terrifying. Whilst it's not always been my number one game if I play it every week, it's absolutely stuck with me, you know, year in, year out, month in, month out, and these days I'm probably playing more Battletech than I have done since late 80s, early 90s, I think.
Yeah, I know that feeling. So where did you find opponents, etc., etc., in the early days then?
Well, it was my then gaming group, which was primarily composed of people from school and sixth form, and then a variety of people from the local game store, Roll and Play in Wolverhampton, which is now, I think, sadly very defunct. You had a room underneath the shop in the cellar that we could all use of a Saturday, and we spent a lot of time there with a variety of fairly random people from across the West Midlands, playing all sorts of stuff, including quite a lot of Battletech.
And are you one of these people who sort of fell out of the hobby and fell back in again, or...?
To an extent, yeah. I've always had a variety of RPG and war game stuff going on. A few years ago when I moved in with my then partner and then we had kids, that certainly knocked things down very, very much compared to previously. you know, it's hard to bugger off for a weekend when you've got, you know, two children of fairly young ages.
Yeah, there are advantages to having only one of them being 26.
Yeah, well, I'm quite looking forward to the point where mine are old enough to for me to be able to easily go away or let them alone for a bit whilst I get some games on.
I'll tell you what the coolest one is. The point at which they learn to drive and you get payback for all the time you've driven them around. Because the first thing I did after Jamie had passed his test was I said, I should be coming back from London from a work do at about 11 o'clock tonight. You're picking me up from the station.
Well done on passing your test in 8 hours' time.
To be fair, the kid's an excellent driver.
Very good. And
we insure him on the expensive car, so he better be.
He better be then. Yeah, he better be. Yeah. Fortunately, I do not have any expensive car, so it's fairly indifferent for me on that. But yeah. I shall look forward to that, Mike.
And you're now a demo agent as well.
Yes. I mean, I've been introducing people to BattleTech and running games for folks, and I got my gaming group into Alpha Strike. There was a good few of us who played Classic, but it was too much for a club night, you know, especially as scenarios got bigger and campaigns got bigger, and we'd take 3 months to play, you know, a game out. It'd pack up, set up every week, photograph, take down, set up the next week.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
So I was looking for something much simpler and quicker to play that was still recognisably BattleTech and still felt like BattleTech. And I dived into Alpha, got the club playing it, and then had to source about 6 copies of the rule book. I think 2 from the States, 1 from Czechoslovakia. not Czechoslovakia, that dates me as well, yeah. 1 from the Czech Republic. I think I might have bought one off Sven at Sci-Fi Trader. And now I've had to do the same thing twice over already with later printings.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's always been a big part of my gaming, to be fair.
Where do you guys play?
I play mostly at Shake, Battle and Roll, my local games club, at the north end of Birmingham. We're about 5 minutes from Junction 7 of the M6.
Oh, closer than I thought you were.
Yeah. It's just far enough for me to get over to you that making your Peterborough Crown tournament on the weekend is just slightly too much.
I'll have to come over at some point.
Yeah, please do. But I also play at both Battleground Gaming UK down in Sturchley at the south of Birmingham, and Board in Brum, which is a bit of a misnomer because it's in the sort of back end of Wolverhampton, Willenhall way. Of a Thursday evening off and on, depending on whichever I've got stuff organised for. So, the West Midlands has a very well set up and pretty well attended scene. We've got people playing off in Coventry, off towards sort of Daventry. I think some folks play off at Stags in Telford. And plenty
pretty
of stuff.
I'm pretty sure I've got them on the directory somewhere.
Yes, I think you might have, actually. I think you might have, Mike. But yeah, we're quite well supplied locally. And I mean, I don't always have my official demo agent hat on, but I do try and, represent CGL's various bits and bobs as best as possible and get people playing, which is the main thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Right. So on to the quickfire round. Grin.
My starter for 10
is Classic or Alpha Strike?
Classic. It's absolutely my first love. I mean, don't get me wrong on that. Alpha Strike is a brilliant game. It's definitely BattleTech. I do enjoy it. I can throw a reinforced company down on a club night, play to a full conclusion. But Classic. It hooked me in like 1984. It hasn't let go since.
It's the crunch, I take it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the crunch. It's the, oh, my hip shot out. Do I fire 2 medium lasers or 3? the sort of really crunchy, serious decision points and the stories it creates, the narratives as well. If it was just crunch, I'd probably, you know, still play it now and again. I find, say, Starfleet Battles the odd hankering for an advanced squad leader occasionally, but Classic keeps me playing because it builds that story as you play.
Yeah, I think it was just Dirksen that said it too, that Classic is the Grey Death Legion and Alpha Strike is Mike Stackpole.
Yeah. Boom, splash, bang, explosions, daka daka. Yeah.
As opposed to, oh shit, I need to fire this, and I'm going to cook here.
Yeah, my medium lasers are tracking, but the SRM's not quite there yet. And the peak's still recharging.
Yeah, the Alpha Strike is a lovely abstraction. It's a work of genius to get something that still feels like Battletech, but removes the need, the time sink that is recording what's happening to your mech, but still get something that just plays like the same game, or at least setting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Mike. Yeah, it feels like Battletech to me.
Yeah.
You don't have the same decision points or the same depth of decision points, but assuming you're playing it with more than, you know, four or five mechs aside,
and why
you're thinking... You're thinking about your formations. Mm. You know, you're thinking about what your battle lance is doing. Have you covered it properly with your fire lance? Can you get the whole scout lance through? You know, not, I've got three pips of armor left on my charger. Yeah,
if I sit this large bundle of LRMs here, who can spot for it? Kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to think about fire lanes. You've got to think about where your centre of mass is going to go, you know, where your share point is going to be.
Ooh, that's a good word.
It is. I like that word. I've done a lot of historical gaming off and on as well. And my first attempt at a degree was an international politics and strategic studies degree. So, you know.
Really?
War games has always been a considerable adjunct to.
I bet.
Which is obviously why I work as a QA in a technology company now. So, yeah. All that sort of stuff. And in many ways, Alpha Strike feels like the, not quite the operational, but the higher level sort of command where people are, you know, you're worried about not the individual tank or, you know, the squad of soldiers. You're sort of looking two down. You're thinking, well, I'm a sort of company commander or a battalion commander. What my lance is doing? I don't want to know that the turret ring is jammed on my third manticore, particularly. I want to know, is it still capable of shooting?
Yeah.
Is it, you know?
And the other thing you get is, of course, you can do these mad big things that the likes of Andy Dickinson and Sam Holt do. Where you are literally, you can put yourself in the position of, right, you take that company and go don't tell me what you're doing, just do it.
Just go. Yeah. That's yours. That's your objective. There's your troops. You know, proper sort of mission-led stuff, you know. And I think Andy was talking about getting something like 1,000 mechs on table next year.
Sign me up.
Or 1,000 units, anyway. But that's phenomenal.
Isn't it?
And Alpha can cope with that.
Well, Classic can if you've got a year.
I mean, this is it. When I was saying about how much Classic had sort of ground down almost and was taking months to play, we'd started playing through the Jihad Chaos campaign, and we'd sort of have started with half a lance or a lance each, and we sort of rotated each scenario, so I'd run the first scenario for the other couple of people playing. One of them would run the next week for me and the other guy and so on. But it snowballed horribly because we did quite well. And we'd got up to a battalion within about six games. And it was like, well, I want to put my company down. Okay, well, that's fine. Gives a really nice big up for. And it's like, well, we've got a whole company on our side and two stars of clan mechs on the other, and So we've got a turn and a half done in 2 hours. Take a photo of it, note down everything, set up the next week takes an hour, 2 hours of play, tear down takes an hour, and which is why I really liked Alpha Strike when I picked it up. And
I'm still stunned. My first introduction to classic, in fact, to the whole current Battletech community was Stuart running Worldwide Event 2004, I think. There were 12 of us playing Classic on what I think was something like an 6 by 12 table.
Brilliant.
And we there were, I think, something like 40 or 50 mechs aside, and we finished. we ran from 9 till about 6, and we finished.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty good going.
That is pretty good doing. Stuart runs an excellent big classic game. It's his thing, I think.
I mean, looking at the tables he's put on recently for a couple of shows, they're fantastic. Full 3D. When he was test running some files for the Battletech City maps, I test printed a few of them as well, and they were really nice. But, you know, I've got 8 of his two-story buildings and one of his sort of shopping mall type ones. And then I look at what he puts on and it's like 8 map sheets worth of full 3D terrain right up to level 7 buildings.
Yeah, it's a complete BFM with everything in 3D.
It's
amazing. Yeah.
Very nice stuff.
It's where we differ. And it's one of the things I love about certainly this year's Salute and hopefully Salutes going forward, is that we've had the two tables next to each other and he's got this massive, great, very visual, very 3D kind of battlefield, and I'm very much more the classic Wargamer table.
Yeah.
And they both work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I've put on games at shows for a while with various clubmates, but one of my clubmates used to be actually a professional scenery designer for animal parks.
Ooh.
So she does really nice stuff, you know, and that's a transferable skill down to, you know, 6 mil even, never mind real scale. But and my stuff mostly comes out of the recycling bin, and it's bodged together with some spray paint and sticky back plastic, and I like to tell the players, you know, it's like, this is aspirational. If you're good, if you want to put the time in and learn the skills and do the stuff, you can do, you know, my clubmate Lana's half.
Yeah.
If you just want to get playing, if you want something that looks decent enough that you can put together, either bought, you know, I use a fair amount of bought terrain, whether it be Hextech or, Hills from Lancashire Games, TSS or whatever, or railway trees, you know. You can use all that. You can either buy those bits or you can raid the recycling and give it a good spray over a Halfords Grey, dot in a few windows and gribbly bits. You're done. You know, that's fine. It'll be brilliant. Just get playing. You know, it's one thing I do see at shows, and, you know, you've got 10,000 brilliantly painted Napoleonic figures on an exact recreation of, one particular mile of Austerlitz or whatever, and I think that's lovely, but it doesn't move.
I remember
nothing happens.
There was a Waterloo at Salute, which would have been 2015, obviously enough, with the most fabulous 28 mil, I think it was last hour of Waterloo with the Charge of the Old Guard, and it never moved all day.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it looks lovely. It's very aspirational.
Yep.
But it doesn't get you playing. And what I want to do as a demo agent is get people playing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Get them on. Roll dice.
Right. Next up, toys on the table, painted or not?
I desperately try not to field unpainted anything. that said, I'm not going to hold it against people who just want to stick grey plastic down. You know?
Yeah.
Whether it's just because you don't have the inclination to, it took many years for me to enjoy painting and modelling. And even now, I mean, I used to commission paint for a while, but life's just too full of stuff going on for me to deal with a second job. but my personal stuff, I mean, to be fair, when I was commission painting, is to get it done, get it on table. If it looks decent at 2 foot, fantastic. You've done the job.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to paint like a Golden Demon painter? If you enjoy that, superb. I just want to get reasonably painted stuff on table and start rolling dice.
It's interesting how many people have pretty much the same answer to this question, which is, for me, yes, for everybody else, you do you.
I mean, I have put unpainted stuff down, or base coated, or,
I think I've done it twice and I hated myself for it.
It just doesn't grip me. In many ways, the visual thing with the wargaming. I mean, I even do stuff down to sort of 2mm 1/600. And actually, that looks really good for the sort of period, you know, when you've got a Franco-Prussian battlefield and you're almost one-to-one for the troops. And you can feel like you're a general on a hilltop peering out at the massive troops moving backwards and forwards. I've got some nice irregular miniatures, sort of English Civil War, Dutch Revoltish. It's one advantage with 2mm is you don't have to be too picky about what rifle they're carrying.
No, quite. But, yeah. See that little brown smudge there? That's a rifle.
Yeah, quite. Yeah, but you can look down on it and it looks like a period woodcut.
Yeah.
And I think, that's nice. That's good. But, you know, other people want to see gloriously painted 28s in 6 of them on a table where you can really get stuck into this is my specific thing. And I play that as well, but mine aren't as well painted as theirs. So,
but as we sometimes say on our club paint and bitch session, this quantity does have a quality of its own.
Yeah, definitely. he says, looking at the pile of mechs he's got on the desk even.
Don't know what you're talking about, Mike.
Yes, I know you suffer from that as well, Mike.
I have the great advantage that I was going to say I don't have to paint anything for this weekend, except I do. I've got 16 trucks and 48 oil cans to paint, but those are going to be out with the paint pens, and they're only objective markers. They don't have to be anything fancy.
Yeah, quite. That's another nice thing, I think, actually, to come back to BattleTech with that. The rise, or not necessarily the rise, but the resurgence of scenario-based, objective-driven play.
Yeah.
that was always a very big thing for us back in the 80s, 90s. Stand-up fight, fine. It's easy. You can just throw down and go. Admittedly, with terrible balance issues due to
Seabills, lack of tons.
Balance. Yeah, quite. You were there at the time. You understand.
I have only just talked down at our club out of using tons as a balancing system.
To be fair, you stick with stock designs from, say, TRO 3025. Tonnage isn't a bad match.
No.
Unless someone decides to either only take the best or optimised that they can fit into the tonnage, or just decides to play silly buggers and just takes, you know, 4 charges or whatever, which has a hilarity all of its own, but, you know.
Yes.
Not if you want to get a bit of tactical play in as opposed to run at them screaming. For many years, yeah. Balance was a thing that happened to other games.
Yes.
It drove scenario play, it drove objective play. And as I'm very fond of saying on the Discord, bring probes, bring hands, bring a mix of stuff.
This is true, because I think one of the reasons that the Crown Tourney, which we'll discuss later, is an objective, very much an objective based scenario system, mm-hmm. session tournament, is that it doesn't penalise your I wouldn't say poor, not as suboptimal list building as much as a straight knockdown drag out fight does.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's good. The whole thing, people come for giant robots shooting each other and punching each other. But what I think, from my experience, why people stay is because it develops a narrative and it develops a, I just managed to grab that supply crate, or, you know, I had a list that was terrible. It had and they were all awful, but it was brilliant.
Yeah.
You know.
And on top of that, I like to think that we're also a nice community and there's very much less of the win-at-all-costs approach than you see in some other gaming communities like Name Games Workshop.
There's
a reason I don't play Tournament Warhammer Ancient Battles anymore.
Yeah, well...
Usually about one or two people out of the 16 in the tournament would just make it miserable.
I think, sadly, competition wargaming, when it's a straight-up fight, especially, or when it's strange comedy objectives and stratagems, can do that. I'm not a big fan of head-to-head tournaments, precisely for those reasons. I mean, looking at GW's recent terrain stuff, where you have to have six identically sized, strictly tournament legal, non-building footprint things, and I just looked at it and I thought, this is just bizarre. Anyway,
not my
monkey. If you enjoy it, then fair enough, but
we'll be over here with the big stompy robots.
I'll be over here wishing my Warhammer had hands.
Indeed. Right, favorite era.
Well, I mean, all of them doesn't quite cut it. It's probably easier to say least favourite, but the part of, this is sadly, I apologise in advance to the listeners, a bit of a wander off into my personal Battletech history, but I love the Succession Wars. That's where I started. That was literally all there was, but it was brilliant. Mad Max mechs. You know, pirates landing their dropships to pump water out of lakes, to take it off and steal and sell to hard scrabble mining communities, whilst you're beaten down, held together with duct tape and baling wire mechs are clattering after them. Fantastic. Clan Invasion, I didn't quite have the level of disaster that some people had when they encountered the clan invasion, and people who, you know, balanced equally on tonnage clan mechs versus inner sphere.
That was never going to fly, was it?
Yeah, well, but it's okay because their honor code keeps it fair. And, you know, I enjoyed clan invasion. It was a shock. There was exciting stuff. Reading the novels, there were things that hit like a ton of bricks, you know, at the risk of spoiling a 35, 36-year-old book. The Dragoon Conference, where they've got the house leaders together on outreach, and they're saying, you know, oh, these are the clans, this is the danger, and Romana Lyo's there just quietly beaming and, you know, cackling away, and Wolf turns around to her and says, look, you're not taking this seriously. And she's like, oh, what's the problem if horrible invaders from outside the inner sphere invade with their weird alien mechs and giant warrior things? It's like, well, they'll subjugate you all and put you all against the wall. And she's like, oh, no. If that were to happen, we'd be saved. And everyone's looking at her like, what? And then she sort of says, because the descendants of Alexander Kerensky and the Starling Defence Force will come back to save us.
Isn't it the most beautiful irony?
Yeah. And there's just a moment of silence. The Wolf just looks at her and then says, Chancellor, these are the descendants
of Alexander Kerensky. We are.
Bang.
The thing I love about the clans, once I got over being outraged about the fact that there was suddenly tech on the map that would take people's head off at 20 hexes range, is, are you familiar with Ian Banks as a writer?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
There's a delightful concept, of, and I think mostly it happens in Accession. There's something he calls the outside context problem, which is something that's so freaking alien to your current culture that you have no clue what to do about it. And the clans are a glorious example of that.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. It was just completely... I just burp.
What?
Yeah. Huh? But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the clan era. There was a lot of good stuff on that. And then the sort of Takayid and then the sort of great refusal at the end of that sort of arc as well. But the whole Wolf-Falcon war, loads of really good stuff going on with that. Really enjoyed it up until at least sort of 3058, which still has its selling points for me. But over the 90s, I found the Fedcom Civil War era was just dull. It was too big. It seemed to require a lot of people to make very poor decisions. It didn't feel like you could fit into it well. You know, unless you're Victor Steiner Davian and you've got 47 regiments of mechs jumping from planet to planet, there wasn't space to play within that in a lot of ways. Some of it was good. First Strike and the whole Chaos March part. A lot of that was very, very good.
And I think some of the novels that have come out fairly recently that fit into those, fit into that era, have done quite a bit for the smaller skirmishes and interesting places you can play with. I'm thinking particularly of Embers of War.
Yes, yeah. I mean, backfilling in for that to make it more accessible is pretty good. But I just kind of found that over that period, there's a lot going on, and it just wasn't as gripping, and it just kind of, you know, I still bought all the TROs, I bought scans and novels, but I just didn't play as often. And then, of course, we hit 2000, and what may well have been the saviour of Battletech, or depending on your point of view, the worst thing ever to happen in the world, except whatever your other next least favourite era is. MechWarrior Clix, I enjoyed playing it, but it wasn't my Battletech. The time jump was weird. I know it was effectively forced upon for outside reasons, but I didn't really enjoy it. Catalyst have gone back and backfilled it much better. At the risk of sounding ungrateful to Clix. And a lot of people came into the Battletech hobby through Clix and the computer games at the time, which, you know, I can't fault it. It revitalized Battletech in many ways. It kept stuff going, but it was not greatly gripping for me. So when AMPRO and then CGL kicked off with the Jihad, I was quite sceptical because they had to jump back and backfill stuff, and there were set things that were building up over the 90s, but which had then had a 5-year gap and kind of lost momentum. But I bought the first of the combined Jihad books on a bit of a whim when I had a few spare shekels at one point. And actually, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's a confused mess, but I think that's kind of how it was always inevitably going. The problem is, I think to a degree, that some of the lore is not done. A lot of the lore is very in-character lore. You haven't really got much of a... Take a big step back and from a purely game masterly point of view, attempt to understand what the hell went on here.
Yeah, I mean, that was always the big complaint with it, but it was not... in the style of previous authoritative source books, but it was all reports. It was intelligence reports.
Yeah, what used to happen is you got the intelligence reports, which and you got a tech readout, and then Mike Stackpole got handed a brief, and three novel series came out, which expanded, which advanced the plot another 20 years.
Yeah.
These days it's Brian Young or Michael Chiavella, but the same thing is now true. They seem to have got back onto that road where there are novels to advance the story and then source books to tell you what the status quo is now.
What actually happened, where you are now, what the results of things are in the universe. Yeah, I mean, both of these are very valid, but I have to say, I actually, when I read it, as opposed to relying on third-hand off the internet screaming denunciations of the jihad, I thought, yeah, it's brilliant. Really, really good. And, oh, but this would never have happened. It's like, well, no, because I've got three source books on the shelf where I can trace how X, Y, and Z actually build up and why this is now, why Z is a thing because of them. And this is big. It's stuff. Things are happening. And there are things I'm not massively fond of within it, but I can say that for all eras, So actually, overall, I actually think the jihad is my favourite era.
Ooh, that's an interesting choice.
It's a controversial opinion, I know, but you get a bit of everything, but in doses that make it matter. And you can pick an awful lot of bits to focus on, or you can do great broad sweeps of it.
Yeah.
And it feels like it matters.
Yeah.
Which is something I didn't get from the Fedcom era, and Dark Ages was just a step, into the dark. That said, I have been playing a lot of Ilkland stuff over the last year or so with Hinterlands and Mercenaries, and it's very, very good. It has the feel that I like from the Jihad, but it's fresher. There's exciting new stuff going on. There's exciting new tech, which you don't feel bad for bringing. if you turned up 20 years ago with a mixed tech design of extreme ridiculousness, it would have been a bit, that's some serious, you just happened to replace all the guns on your mech with Plantech ones, did you? Hmm. But it integrates all of that really nicely, and it's new, it's different, it's got really interesting stuff going on, and the new starter sets look fantastic.
Oh, they do, don't they?
Mm.
Absolutely. The thing that struck me, I mean, having had to sort of pick where do I want to set this tournament, you go up to Civil War and you're starting to see that thing where clan tech is starting to bleed into everybody's factions, and they become a little bit, not 100%, but they start becoming a little bit homogenous and hard to tell apart in that everybody's managed to get hold of a Timberwolf from somewhere or whatever. And I think somehow, now we've hit the Ilklan, that there's become a divide again, because everything has its preferred. You've got Jade Falcon with their mental partial wing jumpy loony things, which nobody else really has. And then other forces. When we did the game for Salute last year, the Northwind Highlanders and Jade Falcon forces were so different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a point where they started to blur a bit, and they've started to pull apart again, which I think is great.
Yes, there's a lot more design space, and far less of a everybody's just kind of now been sitting around in the same stew boiling with the same ingredients. Yeah. There's a lot of very different stuff coming out. Although, to be fair, one of the things I have always liked about BattleTech is that it's not prescriptive in the way that some other games are, that if you have Army X, you may only have units X 1, 2, and 3. There is plenty of space, and indeed the actual play of the game supports it, to end up salvaging something.
And there's also, of course, the Inner Sphere General and the Clan General lists.
Yes, which have an awful lot of stuff on anyway for appropriate size. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, favourite faction and what?
Well, I've been painting a lot of falcons recently, which I never thought I'd do.
There's a lot of that about. It must have something to do with this big box with that freaking bane in it.
Yeah, well, that helped. the actual main reason I started painting falcons was because I needed some as an op fall for one of the scenarios in the Jihad Chaos campaign about 15 years ago now. I've toyed with a couple of different clan factions, and then I always just think, well, I've already got a whole bunch of falcons. I might as well, you know, turn it into a proper faction. Not that I can say that they're a favourite faction, because they're terrible, terrible people. At, you know, even the best of them. But I always had a soft spot for the Lyrans originally. Just the combination of sort of industrial output and sheer unwillingness to do anything other than get punched in the face and keep fighting. But I have to say, I also picked up a soft spot for the Capellans with Sun Tzu, Lyo, and the whole Xinsheng movement, because that was a brilliant reversal of what had been the butt monkey of the setting.
The other thing about that, of course, is if you pick House Liao, you're reasonably sure that you're not that likely to get a blue-on-blue force, because not everyone, very few other people are going to pick him.
Yes, that's true. That's true. They're not a popular choice in setting or amongst players in many ways. Yeah. But I think mainly I've got a real hankering for the Free Worlds League, and in particular the Duchy of Anjurian. Yeah, purple burb. So I've got a long running sort of Defenders of Anjurian project, which mostly uses older designs. I've got a lot of older Plastec, or the plastics from around the 35th anniversary box. 30th anniversary box.
Don't look at me. I was out of the hobby at that point.
Well, whatever it was, whichever one it was, sort of in the noughties into early 35th. I'm sure it's the 35th box. Anyway, it's in the loft. But yeah, they mostly use that sort of older set of stuff. And then I've got a Atrian Hussars force using a variety of far more up-to-date and modern, both in terms of actual mech designs and CGL models from the more recent Kickstarters onwards, CGL plastics. So they look a fair bit more modern than the Anjurians do. But, yeah.
Who cares?
I've got too many factions, too many mechs, and not enough time to get them all on the table.
But, I mean, as the saying goes, hexagonal bottle caps will do just fine.
That's true. That's true. Just all you need to buy, folks, is a copy of a game of Armoured Combat, and that'll set you up for life.
It will. Just add
the force pack you fancy, and maybe one expansion and a box of tanks and the force pack with the other mech you really liked.
The Alpha Strike rules from that are a free download, and maybe a couple more Lance packs. Now I've got putting more toys on the table, and oh shit, here we go.
Yeah, the Alpha Strike box is very good as well.
It is. I've heard good things about
to go
that.
Along with it. and you get the Wraith, which is a lovely model, which I've been making a lot of use of the Wraith in our Clan era mercenary stuff. It's nice.
It's a mad little thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good fun.
Favourite unit?
Gleason Stalwarts.
Who?
My personal mercenary unit.
Oh, right. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, no, they were the military arm and security arm of Blackburn Leyland Interstellar, which is a much faded Star Corp, trading up and down the Lyran Free Worlds League border. They've done me proud for about 30 years now.
Oh, that's pretty good.
They always seem to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Favourite cannon unit? Cut off.
Actual cannon unit that I really like. Ooh.
I'm going to have to update that question.
Pretty much any of them. I've always liked the ELH, the Eridani Light Horse. Linden's company, as they were to start with, Linden's Battalion, before they got knocked off. The picture of the very Swedish-looking Linden's Battalion trooper with his kind of 70s moustache and blue beret sitting on the camping chair, that was, I just thought that looked cracking. I've always actually had quite a liking for the Oberon Confederacy and their various We're Not Pirates, Honest Gov units as well. Red Jack Ryan's Pirates, they were quite a favourite. But house units, I like Crucis Lancers.
You've hit that point where you've built so many forces and op fours for so many different things.
I have enjoyed doing the sort of those junkyard camo with the Amphigean Light Assault Group recently, which has been a very easy paint job and came up really nice. just to go back to the 2 foot rule, and you don't have to get too carried away.
Right. What's next? Favourite novel?
There's quite a few.
You've not had a single favourite for anything yet, so I wasn't expecting you to break the habit.
This is why I'm still here playing it after 40 years. There is one standout novel, actually, which is Wolves on the Border.
Oh, God, yeah.
Which I think is just a really good book, full stop. But also,
Heir to the Dragon runs it a close second in my book.
Yeah, it's got too many Kirittans in.
Oh, okay. Suit yourself.
I'm not a big fan of the Combine, although they are comedic. But it's Wolves on the Border is just really good. Pretty much peak Battletech. The only other book I think that really runs it close to me is very original, right back at the start, Decision at Thunder Rift. The focus is tight, but the sort of sweep behind it is epic. It's got proper Mad Max mech feel in snow. It's got betrayal, it's got heroism, it's got infernos, you know, it's got everything.
And it's got that thing that a lot of the Battletech novels manage, and I think it's a credit to the whole novel range, is that they're always written such that you can see the game.
Yes. Yeah, you can almost feel how the game plays through Thunder Rift,
Which I think is a testament to the game as much as it is to the novel writing.
I think they've been sort of properly synergistic with that. The novels have been written to fit the game. The game has been easy to novelise. And again, that's part of, you know, why I say you come for the giant stompy mechs and you stay for the story.
Because
a lot of it feels very personal. And it really grips them for me.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Your mileage may vary.
No. If you're just playing Battletech for the big stompy robots, go find yourself a novel.
Yeah. You two can have the actinic beams of red hot light, etc., etc. But yeah, it's good. I don't think you can go too far wrong picking up pretty much any Battletech novel just to read. They've all got stuff going on. They're all in nicely integrated into the universe. And they tell you things as well that aren't necessarily in the more sober source books. The one I always think of with that is Pavel Rydzek. With his unfortunate heart attack and what might have been, whereas when you read the Warrior trilogy, there's rather more going on with that than you might expect just from the very sober write up in the source books.
It's also I've heard it said that you can tell the age of a Battletech fan or how long they've been a fan by their reaction to the name Laurie Kalmar. Because that first scene is a doozy when you're 17.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I won't spoil the 40-year-old novel for people, but...
she makes an entrance.
You can't go far wrong starting with Decision at Thunder Rift.
No, you can't.
Book.
Absolutely not. It's a Bill Keith writes damn good stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's completely independent of needing to know about Baltic.
No. It also very nicely sets up some of the tropes. The Draconis Combiners villains.
Well, yes, obviously.
And it's also, I think, responsible for the whole Marauder's villain mech trope.
Yes, yeah.
And also Marauder as being actually quite a bit tougher than its stats make out.
Well, I mean, whilst the novels usually follow vaguely, reasonably close to Battletech stats, there can be some quite heroic actions from things you don't expect. Good
luck. The one
shot.
Thing the rules don't do well is plot armour.
No, you've got to ladle up quite a lot for that.
The game we ran at Salute from Embers of War, once I'd researched the forces by basically taking apart the novel and the one supplement that mentions it with a fine-tooth comb and put forces together, you looked at it and went, dear God, but the good guys had plot armour in this one. They should have got creamed.
Yeah.
But they did on our first two test plays.
Well, yeah, I'm not surprised. Unless you've got stackpole rules for exploding your engine and happen to have laced the entire battlefield with explosives and happen to be facing particularly dim opposition in the form of a Falcon's Finest. I'll let the alert listener guess the book there. not that it should be very hard for anybody. There are...
But he's such a nice boy.
Crippling self-doubt.
that too.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, the novels are in many ways the book of the film rather than necessarily historically accurate treatises of in-depth Battletech tactics. But they crack along. They're good to read. I highly recommend if you haven't read any.
You've picked out a word there that I've used to describe Battletech in the past, which occasionally gets me odd looks, but they are fundamentally future historical wargaming.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that there's probably more lore than frickin' World War II in some places.
Yeah, I mean...
And it hangs together, unlike the Warhammer world.
Well, it suffered much less from... What do we need to do today to sell things? It's got a much better internal consistency and coherency. Than...
As every single author I've interviewed says, fact-checking team.
Yes, both. I mean, official fact-checking, as it were, and, say, the people at Sana who put an awful lot into combing through tens of thousands of pages to make sure that what they're getting up is, if not official, is as absolutely well researched as possible. And you can do that, and you can be reasonably sure that it's not going to be something deeply bizarre.
Yeah. Right. Favourite of the video games, if you play any of them?
Well, I did.
Not on this computer.
No. I haven't actually technically had a machine which is capable of playing games on for quite a while now. So I haven't played HBS. I haven't played MechWarrior 5. I've seen other people play them, other people rave about them, and yeah, they look good. But I mean, my first Battletech computer game was Crescent Hawk's Revenge.
Wow.
Which I don't think I ever finished. I think I lost the decoder disc well before I got anywhere close to finishing it.
Gosh.
I enjoyed pretty much all the MechWarriors I've played. But if I want to play Battletech, I want to play it on the tabletop.
Yeah.
So whilst the computer games have been quite nice, a Mega Mech actually in particular is very helpful when I, you know, on those occasions where I haven't had a gaming group to play with, I've played Mega Mech quite a lot, and it is very, very good. All kudos to the Megamake team. You know, it's exactly what I actually want out of a BattleTech computer game. It's BattleTech on the computer.
Yeah, and speaking as a tournament organizer, my God, MechBay is brilliant.
Oh, I'm really impressed with MechBay.
Me Absolutely. Too. And I say that as someone who is partly responsible for keeping Jeff's BT Tools on the road. MechBay does unfortunately just knock it into a cocked hat.
Well, Jeff's tools have been excellent.
There's been
a lot of various excellent fan-based computer stuff across the years. But we're now at a point where actually, assuming I remember to charge the tablet anyway, I would quite happily use a set of those tools at table and not rely on printed record sheets. MechBay, the force building, the filters. I'm not a big one for the sort of breakdown of mech stats and effectiveness, but actually it's integrated quite nicely into that.
It is.
For them as want to be able to see that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
It's not quite there yet for the thing I want it for, which I may have mentioned on the Discord, which is the ability to say, here is your tournament pack as a MechBay link. Anything you pick from this link will be valid.
Yes.
And that would make my year, day, month, life.
I think looking at MechBay, and I am not an actual coder. I do QA work. And my hobbies are generally analog at table rather than fiddling about with tech. But I think actually it's probably pretty doable, and hopefully without too much stress and grief for the MechBay team. Now I've cursed them saying that, but that would be brilliant.
I've got an issue open on the GitHub saying this is what I'd like it to do, please, and hopefully we can get to talk to Drake at UK Games Expo about it, which we're very nearly about to move on to.
Brilliant! No, that's a great segue actually, because we do have some excellent guests.
But before we do that, I have one more question.
Go on.
The Kickstarters. Did you, and how bad was it?
Didn't do the Game of Armored Combat one because at that point I thought, I've got enough. I bought that later on when a set came up secondhand.
Clan Invasion Kickstarter, yeah.
I did, jumped in on the Clan Invasion Kickstarter. I didn't order any extra dice and it was a relatively simple order I put in. It did take a while longer, but given that it was over COVID, everything fell apart and... I'd just have the second wee one turn up. In all honesty, it was fine. It arrived when it arrived, and that was brilliant. You know, we knew it was going to be difficult, to say the least, but it turned up. Everything was fine. I really like it. Mercenaries was a bit of a wild ride, but again, I didn't order anything too hugely complicated. Was a bit galling waiting whilst everybody in the States was going, woohoo, we've got everything.
Sitting
there drumming our fingers.
Yeah.
come on, deliver outside.
I want my grey plastic mound.
Yes. I can't live without adding another foot of grey plastic, my mound of grey plastic that I'll get round to painting sometime soon. I mean, from my point of view, it was slow. But we knew what was going on, what was happening. It wasn't awkward. It wasn't difficult. As we've alluded to on the Discord, I paid for shipping when they said pay for shipping. You know, and then it's just a case of waiting.
It's not rocket science, people.
Yeah. I've done a few Kickstarters, which have been disasters, like actual literal disasters. And I've done Kickstarters, which have been incredibly tightly focused. Already have the work ready to go, and they've delivered. Even then, they've probably not delivered on time, but they've delivered close to.
Yeah.
And considering the size, the scope, the level of actual staffing that CGL have, You know, they're not a massive multi-million dollar Games Workshop sized, bigger than the angling industry company. It is still basically three guys in the basement making cool games for their mates.
Yeah, absolutely.
They got it done. It came out. Very happy with it.
Yep, that's pretty much it. I have Randall on record as saying they will never do a Kickstarter with that many SKUs again. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, well, they did say they'd trim down, and yes, they did trim down, but trimming down from 75,000 SKUs to 55,000 SKUs was not the level of trimming down that it needed, you know. Yeah, quite.
Yeah.
But, you know, these things are always every single one of them is a learning experience. Every single one of them is a new project. We deliver far too many new projects at work in many ways. Yeah, you know, it's difficult. Yeah. Any project is difficult when you're dealing with factories that are 4,000 miles away, shipping literally to every single area of the globe, in the middle of various global crises, which I think doesn't help. Catalyst simply haven't caught a break on global crises.
No, they really haven't, have they?
Yeah, there's always something has exploded, which doesn't help in the slightest. But they've got it done. I know there's a few holdouts and there are a few bits which aren't yet, but, you know, when you're at 99% done.
Yep, absolutely.
We just need stock of Mercenaries box sets in the UK.
Please, and more Aces and.
Yeah, quite. Well, Aces is trickling through, to be fair.
I picked up a second box as a housewarming present for Bob, who has now moved to Juryland, which means we don't see him at club anymore, which is a crying shame.
But at least he can play on his own.
Yes. This is true. Let us move on to that tenuous link that would have been really nice 3 minutes ago, but never mind. UK Games Expo. So what's your official or semi-official job here?
Well, I am allegedly events lead, basically for the various booked and paid for events. I've been attempting to herd cats towards getting those up and on and listed and ready to go, and hopefully enough agents on the day to make sure everybody gets to run various events.
And your counterpart on the booth, because we have a booth in the main store, even though we don't have Catalyst to run it, is Chris Hartford, who I'll be having on the podcast in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I hope.
It is indeed. Noted BattleTech author
with his finger in more pies than folks realise. I think he's this lovely, quiet, unassuming little chap who just comes around and talks to you about BattleTech, and you realise that if you look, start looking at the back of books, he's been around.
Yes, he's got quite a corpus of work for BattleTech, and
he's a thoroughly nice chap.
Yes, he is a very nice chap as well. But assuming that you're all coming to UK Games Expo, you can meet Chris Hartford almost certainly on the booth, or one of the various other special guests which will be floating around. We have a couple of different painting events with Camo Specs artist God and Davian. Lovely chap.
Mad as cheese, he is. Absolutely mad. Yes, what a lovely guy.
He'll be doing some masterclass work and also some paint and takes, at which I won't say it too loudly, but we should have a special event mini for you, which you'll have to find out on the day. So, yes, if you're booking into one of the painting events, there is a miniature provided as part of the event, which you'll get to paint in the company of God and Davian. Who can say better than that?
No, quite. And we've also got a few authors turning up.
We do.
Some better known than others. That's not fair. Some of them, I think Daniel Iceburn is a particularly interesting example because he's mostly written in German up until literally this year, I think, when one of his novels made it out in English.
I mean, were his stuff's all from sort of the FanPro? originated in the FanPro era, didn't it? Unfortunately, as my German is almost entirely from Battle Action Force comics and Commando comics, I'm afraid.
You can swear very reading, well, but that's about it.
Yes, I can say, oh no, it's a Tiger Tank, and oh, I've been shot, or, you know, Nine Das Blood. But yeah, that's about it, which actually doesn't do too badly for Battletech novels in many ways.
Quite.
But yes, we'll have a full suite of luminaries at the booth. So yeah, if you come along and beg a demo game of the many various things that's going on at the booth, including, I believe, some stuff which has been very rarely seen outside of either Essen Spiel or the big US conventions. You can see some exciting upcoming stuff from Catalyst there, and meet exciting Catalyst folk.
And the other thing we will be doing on the booth, even though Catalyst have not got stock, is we aim to keep track of who does.
Yes.
So if you come up to the store and go, I need to buy one of these, we'll go, well, you try them or them, and we'll try and keep that reasonably up to date as to who's sold out and who hasn't over the course of the 3 days.
Indeed, I think you've drawn the short straw on that, haven't you, Mike?
But then it's what I did at Salute, so.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, it's good if we can point people to where stock is, and I believe there's quite a few people are badgering their various game stores and online retailers who are at Expo this year.
We know for sure the Leisure Games, good old Leisure Games of Finchley, who give yet another shout out to, because they have just come up with some prize support for the Peter of Crown tourney.
Oh, lovely. Well done.
Thank you, guys. We really, really appreciate you.
I have to say, their service has been excellent. I've ordered various bits and bobs off Leisure, and they've always
absolutely
been fantastic.
They have the slight advantage that their supplier is not those who we do not name.
I believe they utilise a supplier from the
so do I.
Element
Games are supposed to be there. I have spoken to Matt, I think it's Matt at Element Games, to discover he's no longer the guy running the buying team for what they're bringing to shows, but he's put me in contact with the right person who has said, oh yeah, good point, we really missed the boat at Salute, didn't we? They brought no Battletech stock.
Yes, I believe you sold everybody with Battletech stock out of Battletech stock at Salute, which didn't really help.
Yes, we did, for the point of view of those people who actually managed to buy some. And I think Leisure Games were sort of heading home happy, going, we've sold all our Battletech stock, we better order some more. And also, yes. I have a mole at Zatu, who has been who originally apparently were only going to bring a game of Armored Combat, and I pointed out this may be short-sighted.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, even from sort of non-CDT folk, random Battletech players at the Expo, I've had a fair bit of who's got stock, what stock is there, who's going to be there that I can, you know, what can I find Battletech-wise? So, yeah, I think that's definitely a goer. If you can't find any and you don't know where stock is, come to the booth.
Which is Hall 3, say, booth 150, I believe.
That's it, Hall 3, booth 150, 150. Come and give us a poke on the booth.
And if we don't know, we'll find out for you. And to be perfectly honest, if you don't know what you want to buy, I am prepared to come and be a personal shopper for you. I did it at Salute several times.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, we can... Between the various agents and authors and everybody else floating around, I strongly suspect we'll be able to give you a shopping list personalised and tailored to your level of desire, commitment and need and experience, for that matter. But yes. Which, actually, to be fair, if you want some free salvage boxes, all you need to do is sign up for Drafted for War, which is one of our very popular events. I say three, you get them as part of your entry price for the tournament.
Yeah, which is going to... And that's along with all the events, which we're now going to go through, I guess, in Hall 1.
Indeed. Yes, we're in Hall 1 for the event, as I understand it. I don't want to put too much credence on anything until we're there setting up and we actually know for sure exactly where we are. But I believe that's where we should be.
Right. So we have Drafted for War, which a massive success last year.
It was a phenomenal success and was the reason that when you interviewed me briefly for the podcast afterwards, all I could do was squeak inaudibly. It's an excellent format, which we picked up from the CDT team in the States. And I ran last year with the help of Sam and Ed and a couple
me
of
included
others,
at some
yourself
points.
With some of the, yourself with some of the,
before everyone goes, oh, that sounds really intimidating. There were at least two people who I'd literally run through Alpha Strike and Aces the hour before.
Oh, I think there were a couple of people who hadn't even had that level of influence, Mike. Adam, who runs the UK Discord, that was his first BattleTech event, and I think the first time he met face-to-face pretty much any of the community that he'd built. So props to him on that, but I think that might have been his first time playing Drafted, first time playing Alpha Strike, sorry.
Okay.
It is very simple. You've got three mechs. You're drawing them at random and then swapping through to try and keep what you want. The game rounds are only 45 minutes, half an hour to 45 minutes, and it's fast and it's furious, and you can't take it too seriously, which very much helps if you haven't really played before, because you're not going to run into anybody who's going to desperately murder you with obscure rules and strange designs and weird bits and bobs that you haven't seen before. It's just really good fun. And we've got five sittings of it this year, and I think we have five sittings of it last year. All of them were full last year within a week or so of actually going live. And I think we're down to about 50% seats.
7 of 8, 6 of 8, 2 of 8.
36. Quite. Yeah. After about 36 hours of going live, we're now down to about 50% seats. So book on for Drafted quick if there's seats left. If not, book on for other stuff because we've got loads of cool prizes. Yep.
Okay, so moving on. I'm picking these off the events list in whatever order they're in.
Battletech
Gothic against the Beasts.
Yes, well... Gothic is, I hesitate to say it's treading on Games Workshop toes, because it's not. The background is very, very different to anything about 40K, but it does have a lot of spiky bits.
It's very much Battletech Spiky Chaos Death, isn't it?
yeah.
In a good
absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. I wasn't massively sold on its aesthetic, but I read the primer when it came out, when it got a little leaked, unfortunately. But if anything, that seems to have actually built some more hype around it. It's a little bit of a departure into what Catalyst are sort of calling alternate universe Battletech, where things are not the same as they were in mainline Battletech. And Gothic, things got even worse. If you thought the Succession Wars and Mad Max Mecha were bad, It's 10 times worse in Gothic. There's frayed mech warriors, which are genetically spliced, semi-monstrous pilots.
Grief.
There's actual full-on monsters, abominations, bred for war from various strange creatures and twisted genetic experiments, ranging from little sort of, I suppose, elemental-sized swarming grunts to massive small end battle mech sized titans laden down with guns and cybernetic targeting and so on and so on. Against the Beasts is intended to be a pretty basic run through of the rule set, and it's to see how many abominations, how many enemy mech warriors leading them that you can knock down and possibly take away a nice prize, which Arthur, who's behind much of the expo planning is sorting out. Ooh, for us.
Can't wait.
So yeah, we should have an appropriate Gothic prize, and it's intended to let you see what the models look like, what the abominations should look like, because we have some pre-release stuff that Arthur's sorted out on that, and see the nice new map sheets and get a feel for Battletech in a different way, a different flavour of Battletech, I suppose. And I hope that that whets a few people's fancy for it.
Moving on, we have one of last year's successes, Aces.
Oh, ooh, yes.
I so enjoyed this. I taught myself hoarse, as I think did Lewis and a few other people.
Teaching
you, but God, it was worth it.
Yeah, it's good. Aces, for those of you who may not know, it's a solo or cooperative play campaign using Alpha Strike.
Yeah, and frankly, if you don't know, go back and listen to the last episode with Josh Dirksen, who will tell you more than you need to know.
We've had a lot of chatter about it and a lot of excitement. If you haven't got a copy yet, or if you've got a copy and you want a run through with people who've spent a lot of time playing it, I've got three runs of it on the go at the moment, one of which we're on the final mission in the campaign. It's good. It's been a wild ride, but it's brilliant. The bot is very good. It can surprise you. It certainly surprised us on a few occasions when maybe we could have done without it surprising us. It separates movement and combat quite nicely. It jiggles the order of actions for the op for quite nicely. The different types of mechs tend to feel... It builds on something the Battletech's done for a while, which is structure out units as, say, a brawler which wants to get in close and get punching, a sniper that wants to dither around on the edges, putting pot shots in, and whether something's a scout or a skirmisher or whatever. And the card system builds off that, try and give them a reasonable best fit set of tactics that builds on each other. And it does so very well. All credit to the author, who has excellent prior cred for it.
Oh my God, he does. If you want to know all about Aces, wind yourself back to episode 16. In which Josh will happily explain everything and everything about Aces and his pedigree up to there. And also, this will be episode 18. 19 is already in the can, but I am deliberately leapfrogging this one ahead of it to get UKG publicity out. Josh has done an update for me about Snowblind, which is the next Aces box, and
fantastic.
Purely because we really, really want to publicise everything that's happening at the Expo. This episode is literally going out within a couple of days of recording it, as soon as I've got over running the Crown Tourney. And then I will put Josh's episode out about a week or so later. So look out for that. There's more fun stuff in there.
Fantastic.
Then we move on to another of the Catalyst demo team structured events, which is the Grinder.
Yes. Well, yeah. Meet Hotswap and Net Warriors.
Who were Mrs.
Yeah. I'm not sure who thought of the name, but you know, it's provided an awful lot of Sid James style sniggering and Kenneth William eyebrows. It's intended as a no holds barred, all weekend long, drop in, drop out, hesitate to say learning event, but you can pick it up simply with very little pre-knowledge of Battletech, and it throws you against everybody else and everybody else against everybody else. You start with a light mech or a low tier mech, and as you die or get shot out of your mech, you get to go up a tier to a heavier or better mech, and so on and so on, culminating, starting off with your little stinger, your urban mech, your very low-end clam neck, I think, was a Dasher, a very poor pilot, on the early list, or there might be a Baboon. And it moves up from there through sort of medium heavies up into the big assaults, and the final tier is top-end clan ludicrousness.
It's quite interestingly self-balancing, in that the worse you are, the faster you get a better mech.
Indeed, indeed. And you'll get to see more of the scope of Battletech as it goes through, and more of the interesting different bits and pieces. And the bit that I like about it in a convention sense is that if you book a ticket for it for one day, they'll give you a slip at the end of the round, which says Mech Warrior, whoever, can come back to another event. And if they do, if they're booked onto another event, they can start from where they left off. So you can play around on the Saturday, get yourself up to a tier two mech, turn up on the Sunday and start straight away in that tier two mech. And you'll already have a knowledge of what's going on and a bit more stuff to play with. And you can sort of build up a bit of your knowledge and a bit of your tactics through the event. We also have a prize for each session. So whoever manages the most number of kills in a session gets to take away a nicely painted, I must say nicely painted, I painted them myself, British Racing Green, white trim mech from the choice of light, medium, heavy and assault. Sweet. Yeah, so get grinding, Mech Warriors.
Indeed. Moving on, there was some of the feedback we got last year was, can we have more list builder tournaments, please?
So,
here we are with the Alpha Strike.
Something we've seen over the year is that there's a vocal outcry for, I want to do a list builder. I want to get my sweat on. So, yes, building off your Peterborough Crown Tourney this weekend, we have.
We have two. We have the UK Crown Tourney, which is a classic list builder, 8,000 BB Civil War era. That's running on the Friday. Mm-hmm. And then Sam Hall is running an Alpha Strike list builder, which is 400 PV. Using the standard BTCC rules, Battletech competition circuit. Got there in the end. And that's on the Sunday. So if you want a day of the Sunday one's obviously a little constrained because the expo shuts at 4, so you'll literally be playing all day for the Alpha Strike one. The Crown Tourney is a little bit longer, and that's running on the Friday, so it's time to book that day off if you want to prove your list building talents.
Indeed. There are breaks within. We're not going to
We give you 45 minutes for lunch.
No more. But it's not that I would put anybody off who hasn't done much in the way of tourneys before. The Battletech community is actually a very friendly one for tournaments. You will have, even if you rock up having only played one game and have just grabbed whatever models it is that you've got out of the game of armored combat and, you know, heavy recon force pack or whatever, you'll have a great time.
The odds are your opponent will say, will help you get your head around the rules, say, you really don't want to do that.
I've never
had a tournament opponent I haven't considered friendly and helpful.
No, absolutely. I think last year when we ran the Mercenaries contract tournament, it was a very gentlemanly engagement with people who wanted to play. Yes, they want to play, you know, competitively. They want to take home the nice trophies. Yeah. But they also want to have a game that they enjoy and you enjoy. I know I mentioned sweaty list builders earlier, but there isn't an awful lot of hardcore win at all costs, absolutely po-face, no fun tournament play in our experience, I have to say. It's people who really just want to play Battletech and they want to play it to enjoy it.
And I think, as we said earlier, both tournaments are not just kill each other. So you will find that they will. The fact that it's not a straight survival of the most firepowery will make it a little kinder to those of us who aren't very good at building lists like me.
Yeah, absolutely. They're definitely intended to enjoy, I think, and certainly looking at people who have booked, I think you'll have a great time.
Yeah, I mean, look.
Oh, and there's really good price support.
Yeah, there is.
There is very good price support. Do you want to detail
the
price
support?
Go on,
do it quickly. just whet their appetites.
well, for both of these two tourneys, we have a Thunderhead Studios, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Massive dropship. Yep. Mech scale dropship, kindly provided by
Sam.
It's
a doozy.
One for the Friday, one for the Sunday. There are also giant scale mech trophies.
Yep. Have not quite decided how we're doing it for the Crown Tourney, other than it'll probably match the Peterborough Crown Tourney, in which case we'll be awarding a overall winner. Who'll get the dropship, mm-hmm. And then a best general, person with the most objective points, most violent person with the most kill points, with the caveat that if you've won one of the previous tour awards, you can't win the same one, so they'll go to different people. There'll be a wooden spoon, which will be a wooden spoon, I'm told.
Yes.
Caution, wooden spoon is not food safe.
Yeah, no, Mr. J is kindly printing us wooden spoons in plastic just to make sure that they are absolutely useless for you, so that you can treasure it forever without risk of it ending up stained with soup.
Or many other things, yeah.
Breakfast absolutely. Cereal. Yeah.
And
then we have the big tournament.
Ooh. Indeedy.
the UK Open. Yep. Catalyst's big current focus for their own tournaments, our tournaments. The Open. This is intended to address some of the very awkward bits and pieces with a ridiculously vast swathe of possible stuff you can have in Battletech. You have is it five rounds?
It's four, I think, but don't quote me on that.
Four? Yeah, I honestly haven't looked at it for five minutes. Four. Four rounds, of which you take a preset choice of mechs. You take a selection from a preset choice of mechs, which Lorcan Nagel has sorted out some very interesting choices. Yeah. And you fight through with those. So you'll be out of your comfort zone. You'll be playing stuff that you might never normally consider against people who are also picking up what they're playing outside of their own comfort zones and getting stuck in.
Yeah. And it's not for everybody, but equally neither are list builders. Hence the attempt to satisfy as many people as we can over the course of the weekend. If you like the open format, which lots of folks do, judging by the number of people who came to the Scottish Open and so on and so forth, and the fact that we've already got balls to click on link. Only got 23 out of 30 left. There's 7 signups already for the UK Open.
Yep. It's been very popular. There's a series of them up and down the countries. We've got also Nathan off the Experts podcast, who is local to me. We play up at Boarding Brom. He's gone over to play the Irish Open last year, and he was over in Naples for the Italian Open. I think there's a couple of people on the Discord are talking about going over to the Spanish Open in Barcelona. As he just says, there's the Scottish Open in Glasgow.
There is, of course, the Lincoln Open being run by one of my previous guests.
Yes. So it's a proper circuit of competition. And you'll see some very good play there. Very good play. But you won't be surprised. No one's going to pull anything particularly strange and unwieldy out of 40 years worth of obtuse Battletech history.
You're not wrong, folks.
You see what the choices are. You can look at the choices. You can decide what you're going to take. And they're always exceedingly interesting. And I'd recommend anybody, if they fancy a bit of competitive Battletech, have a bash at it, because it's good fun. As I think Dwayne would say, it's good crack.
Yeah, he would.
would. Yeah. And shout out to Lorgan and Dwayne there. Lorgan and Dwayne, who are running this for us, coming over from Ireland for it. So do book, come along.
Very much an all-day Saturday thing.
Oh, yeah.
Don't expect to see much change out of your Saturday between 10 o'clock and 7:30.
No. Again, you are allowed breaks. You know, they will let you go to the loo.
Only a little bit.
They're not going to tie you to the table. Yeah. But, it's good. It's a good format. It has been quite polarising.
It is. I mean,
with people who want to build lists.
I'm not a fan. I'll openly say I am not a fan, but I see how it works for some people, and it does indeed seem to be extremely popular.
Indeed. It certainly... People I know who've played it have really enjoyed it, ranging from I want to win players, you know, I'm intending to win, to I want to go and play good games of Battletech.
Yeah.
Because you will get
absolutely
really good games of Battletech that'll make you think. And you'll see some designs that you almost certainly won't see.
And some weapon types that are going to have you scrabbling for the BMM and going, what the hell does this do?
Yes. Yeah. Well, like I say, if you grab the link, I think there's a link on the open booking page, which will take you to the list of
available. It'll be in the show notes.
And the rounds that they're in. Yeah. And in the show notes.
That's what show notes for.
It's good stuff.
Which just leaves us, apart from the paint and take classes, which we have already briefly discussed, it leaves us with the Irby Derby. Mm-hmm. Yay! God, I love the Irby Derby. Which reminds me, I have some mechs to paint. plenty of time.
The Irby is great fun. As the name suggests, you get a bunch of urban mechs and just fight them against each other. And you'll be in a nicely printed, 3D printed Steiner arena. If anybody's seen that, it's a lovely bit of kit.
Lots of moving walls, pillars, other fun things.
That's it, which are being driven by a variety of bits and pieces in the game as you're playing. This is on, the Irby Derby's on each evening, and 2-4 Sunday, and much like Drafted, it's not a particularly serious game. It's hard to have a deeply serious game when you move 2-3-2. Only have 10 rounds of ammo and a small basting laser.
But remember, it's tin can, not tin can't.
Yes. Are you a tin can or are you a tin can't? Again, nicely painted British Racing green, white trim prizes of a variety of urban mech models from CGL, from their nice urban mech course pack. And... it's just about getting stuck in and having fun.
What's not to like about spending 2 hours moving an angry tin can around the battlefield?
Quite. It is basically just a good excuse to get stuck in. Just get in there, have some fun, don't take it too seriously, spin round and shoot someone in the face when they creep up behind you. Realise that you have no armour and you can't dodge. But at least you've got a big gun.
Even if you haven't got any ammo for it.
Even if you've run out of ammo, and you don't have any arms to punch.
You always kick things. With those little short legs.
You can. Look at his stubby little legs. Hairy little legs. I've run a few Irby Derbies at the club, and they're brilliant for new players, and they're also brilliant for old jaded hands like
myself.
They're
just a hoot.
Because it's just great fun, and it really reminds you of, you know, all the great idiocy of the way we play Battletech. Fantastic fun, excellent wind down. If you've got 2 hours at the end of the day and you think, I'm going to be frazzled, recharge yourself with the Irby Derby.
You don't even need many dice. Because let's face it, it's a freaking Irby. It's got two weapons.
You've got your AC-10, you've got your small basting laser. If you really have to have two sets of dice, you can. But don't worry, we have an immense amount of extra sets of dice, for all our various events. If you want to bring your own stuff, please do. If not, we should have a wide variety of dice for you to borrow. So even if you're traveling light, you're not going to be you're not going to find it a problem. Yep.
So, which also brings me to point out, if you happen to run into me at the show, and you mention to me who my favourite mercenary unit is, which should be pretty obvious if you do listen to the show, I will give you a pair of Tales from the Periphery branded dice.
Very nice. What's your favourite unit, Mike?
You should know that. I am a sad fan of the 12th Vegan Rangers.
Ah, the Vegan Rangers.
They're not vegan. They're best vegetarian. They're from the planet Vega, for Pete's sake. Well, actually, they're not. They're from the planet... They're from somewhere on the opposite end of the galaxy to Vega. It's just... There's obscure lore and history to go with it. Just go read up on it. It'll be good.
This is always one of the things I've liked about BattleTech, is that there's a slew of dubious popcorn.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
It's salted all the way through.
And you can dig into the most obscure little mercenary unit, or not so little mercenary unit in the case of the 12th Vegan Rangers, and there's a surprising amount of lore hiding in the nooks and crannies.
Loads. Yeah, not just for the big guys like Wolf's Dragoons or the Great Death Legion. Loads of little units here and there salted throughout, lots of really interesting stuff. And when I say you come for the giant stompy robots, you stay for the narrative. That sort of thing is precisely what I mean. You will find things that go, oh, wow, and keep you coming back for more and keep you digging in. But yes. So did we miss any
of
the events?
Backtracking. Just let me go back to the page. Let's have a look. Open, yes, AVW, yes. Crown Tourney, Buff Strike Tournament. Grinder, it's Gothic. Drafted for War and the Paint and Take and Painting Masterclasses. Plus whatever fun Mr. Hartford has in store on the main stand.
Indeed. Oh, something I must mention, actually. We don't just have that.
We do not. This may be a BattleTech podcast, but Catalyst would probably like it if we mentioned.
I think they might. Yes, we also have Leviathans, if giant floating pre-dreadnought Victorian era flying battleships float your
flying battleship
goat. Flying battleship, yeah. That's being run by Andy. He's got a couple of slots open for that through the weekend, Friday and Saturday. It is starting to come out available in shops, so if you fancy getting a sneak peek at it and seeing how the giant floating battleships do, they're very nice. Your destroyers about 2 inches long, your giant battleships about 5 or 6 inches long, played on a hex mat, much like BattleTech is, but in the
sky. It's a fascinating system as well. I had a little demo of it last year at UKGE from Andy, and it's an very, very interesting and clever system.
There's a lot going on. It uses a set of differently coloured and sized dice, not, I hasten to add, special official ones that you can only buy at £5 per dice. You are quite able to use normal polyhedrons with it, and it introduces a whole raft of quite nice nuances between the ships and their different gun calibers, turrets against broadsides, aerial torpedoes.
Every faction's got its theme, basically.
Yes, yeah. Some factions are very fast, dashing with torpedoes. Others are a big hulking behemoths or a particularly solid and good at damage control and general all-rounders. So, there's quite a lot going on with it. Quite a lot of difference between the fleets without it being incomprehensibly different and a different game for every faction. Leviathans, do book on, have a look at that.
And then,
we have something that I think has only been seen in the wild at Essen and a couple of you.
I think so, yeah. It may have been at Adepticon, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, I'm not even sure it's been seen very often in the US. Shadowrun Takedown, which is a board game version of CGL and originally FASA's venerable Shadowrun RPG, cyberpunk with elves, dwarves and dragons included. And it's a sort of continuing campaign game. You'll get to play a couple of different scenarios within it, so you'll be able to see how characters progress through the game. It's kind of almost a legacy game where your characters can progress through the runs, get better equipment, skills, stats, and special moves.
In case that wasn't obvious, he's also cooperative. Yeah, I am a huge fan.
Yeah,
I love cooperative gaming.
It does look very good. You play a party of Shadowrunners on a Shadowrun.
There's a thing.
To do great heroic things in the shadows against nefarious corporations, dragons and horrible monsters. That's being brought over and run by one of our colleagues from Germany there. And he'll be running that.
One of the few sadnesses is you can't play that and the Alpha Strike tournament.
That's true, unfortunately.
But you can play that in Aces, so if you need to play Shadowrun and Aces, you can.
You can indeed, yes. Yep, it's a two-hour slot on Sunday afternoon, or with two-hour slots. Quite limited in numbers, because it's a four-player seat.
Four-player game, yeah.
And we have the copy.
Literally, so, the copy.
Yeah, the copy. That should be a good bit to dive into if you fancy a bit of cyberpunk-esque. Cooperative fantasy board gaming.
Yeah, indeed. I can see that one going down well. I'd certainly be, were it not for the fact that I'm probably going to be helping Sam out with the Alpha Strike tournament, I'd probably be there, because as I said, I have a soft spot for cooperative games.
Well, you never know. You might convince me to spot you with Sam for 2 hours if you want to jump on a session of that.
Who knows?
There you go. There you go, folks. You can even potentially play a bit of very exclusive Shadowrun Takedown with our host.
Who hasn't actually played Shadowrun since 1980?
Yeah, well, my copy of it's the hardback first edition.
Yeah, so is mine.
there we go. But certainly many, many other people have played Shadowrun, and Takedown does look pretty good.
It does.
Yeah, quite tempting.
And Shadowrun is quite actually tempting. A really good setting.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's it for our actual booked events.
But other than that, if you happen by the store in Hall 3, it's highly likely that if you want someone to give you a quick run-through of how to play Alpha Strike, or even possibly Classic, you'll find that there is a demo game up on the stand.
Yeah, I believe they've got a variety of demo games running through the weekend, pretty much from dawn till dusk. At least as long as the hall's open.
Yep. And yeah, we can teach you Alpha Strike in 5 minutes. We can teach you Classic in not much more.
That's very true. Alpha Strike especially takes very little to learn. Drafted for War is an excellent way to learn it, but getting quick. and if not, jump on a session of Aces. That'll tell you everything you need to know about Alpha, and you'll get to see the rather exciting card deck as run rapidly through by one of our experienced agents. Mm-hmm. And you can see, even if you don't have a local club near you, even if your games group or whatever doesn't normally play Battletech, that's a great draw to get them into it as a hobby, or even pop it up on the kitchen table and play through a mission or two every week. Yeah.
And we are trying, as I said, I have my spies in various stores camps. We're trying to make sure that if there's Aces available to the UK dealers, it gets brought, because it's going to fly off the shelves if it does.
Indeed. I mean, it's barely stayed on shelves when it's come in, as is. It's been very, very popular. There's some very nice mech models in it, which are not otherwise available.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll just not mention that Bane again, because it's caused too much hysterical laughter already this podcast.
Oh, it's a great piece of kit, that
it's
is.
Ridiculous.
If you want to ruin someone's day, bring the Bane through.
Yep.
It's very silly.
Mind you, the Vulture 2 in Snowblind's not much nicer.
Snowblind's looking excellent.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Next episode after you have listened to this one.
Indeed, you'll have to listen to that and get a deep in-depth knowledge of it.
Mr. Dirksen, fresh from Adepticon, recorded a week and a half ago. I'm not going to take as long to get the episode up as I did his first one, but as I said, we're going to get this one out first so that you can all get your bookings in for UK Games Expo with a better knowledge of what's going on.
Indeed. Thank you very much.
For which my guest has been Nat Hardacre.
Thank you, Mike.
It's been a pleasure.
It certainly has. Thank you very much, mate.
Cheers. And I think between us, we have successfully set the record for the longest episode of this podcast yet. Hopefully you enjoyed that, and we will equally hopefully see you at UK Games Expo. If you need to know anything more about the events, there is a link to the events search for Battletech and Full Leviathans and Shadowrun in the show notes. So if you pop there, then hopefully you'll find everything you need to know. As I said, we are in Hall 3, Store 150 for the booth, and somewhere in Hall 1 for the events. If you can't find us on the show guide, go to Hall 3, Booth 150, and say, "Where's the events, please?" And hopefully we'll have someone once you get there to guide you and sign you in if you book for something. Which really means all I have left to say for this episode, in the interest of getting it out the door as fast as possible, is have fun and roll good dice. Tales from the Periphery is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 international license. In short, give us some credit, don't make money out of it, and if you make an adaptation of it, you must share it under the same license. Have fun! And just in case you're still listening, a reminder, if you see me at UK Games Expo and you can tell me which is my favourite mercenary unit, which shouldn't be too hard, I will gift you with a pair of our branded dice. Have fun!